You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 52 of the Wells Tech Podcast for New Year's Eve, Wednesday, December 31st, 2008. I am Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we're your hosts for a weekly conversation about technology and ministry. And we really appreciate you joining us for this last episode of the year. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Not quite here yet, but maybe for most of our listeners, by the time they listen to it, it will already be 2009. And what that means for us on the Wells Tech Podcast is we've been at this for a year.
Yeah, we were just talking about how a year of weekly shows has really developed an audience for us, and we're just really excited about all the techie connections that we're making within the Synod, and hopefully being a blessing to the various ministry that's going on and supplementing with good ideas to help with the gospel ministry that's going on across the Synod.
Who knew, right? Who knew?
Yeah, exactly.
I think this has really been a blessing for me, and I'm hearing the same in your voice, too, that it really kind of has connected me better to what's going on within our churches and schools as far as technology is concerned. I can't get to, obviously, every congregation in the Synod to kind of see what they're doing, answer questions, or get ideas, but this show has really extended our reach a little bit, and really appreciate you listeners chiming in, both listening and contributing to the show. And this is kind of a special show for us today. We're not going to follow the traditional regimen that we normally go through. We're going to focus in on one of the favorite parts of the show, for me at least, and that's our picks of the week.
That's right, Martin. You kind of laid down a challenge as we were thinking about this show to come up with our top three and bottom three picks of the week. And we had a little conversation about this because it's very hard to say that any of these picks really are in the bottom, but ones that maybe we aren't using that we originally thought were good ideas, but we really haven't implemented into our daily regime or whatever, that will identify as our bottom three picks of the year.
So we each have about some 50 picks and variations thereof. So instead of maybe forcing our listeners to go to the website, although they can always do that and see all of the picks, there's a link in the right-hand navigation that is our picks of the week. We'll probably archive those beginning next year, just for next week's show even. But yep. Instead of having you maybe go through that, we're going to give you a little bonus this week and give you, as Sally mentioned, our top three and bottom three, the best three picks in our opinion. And some of those, and we rate those, maybe Sally and I rate those a little bit differently. I rated mine basically from those that are really indispensable to what I do, that I would really be handicapped if I didn't have these. And the worst, maybe, as Sally mentioned, maybe not necessarily being, you know, just dumb picks, but picks that, you know, we were initially enthused about, but ultimately didn't ever implement or use to the degree that we thought we would use them. Is that fair?
That's a good disclaimer, Martin. We don't make dumb picks. That's good.
That's right. That's right. All 50 of them are smart as smart can be.
Yeah, right.
So let's jump right in, Sally. I will, ladies first, we'll start with the worst, and we'll do a little countdown from 3 to 1. So your third, what we're asking is the third worst pick of the year for you.
For me, that's going to be Google Desktop.
Okay.
Google Desktop is basically something that allows you to put desktop widgets to do various things on your computer over on the side of your desktop. And I was initially enthused about this, not being a Windows Vista user. This was kind of a Vista-like environment that I could create on an XP machine. But what I found was it it did take up some memory, and I wasn't real robust in that area, and so I ended up turning it off more than I turned it on. And then later in the year, actually did become a Vista user on my home computer. I got a nice upgrade and am using Vista, and I am using the desktop widgets that are embedded in Vista, so I really don't have a need for that Google desktop and the tools that come along with it.
Yeah, sorry, Google, on that one. I was a big Google desktop user and used it for about a year before Vista came out, and essentially the operating system has taken that over, so you really don't need the redundancy and the additional processing power and memory that takes. So Google desktop, number three worst pick on Sally's list. I guess I would agree. My third worst is a tool that I really love. That sounds a little bit funny, but it's called StumbleUpon. We talked about this a number of months ago. Essentially, it's a web service that you subscribe to and you configure, and it plants a little button in your browser. I think it works on both Firefox and IE, where you just click, you put in your interests, you click this button on your toolbar, and it will navigate you to a site of interest to you, and it works really slick. So you're wondering, why is it on my third worst list? That's because it just dominates your time. And you click this button once, and you know, 2 hours later, you're wondering where the day went, because you're
addictive.
Yeah, exactly. You're going from site to site to site, and it's kind of almost uncanny how relevant some of these sites are. And some of the things that some of the other picks that we've offered on this show have actually come about by stumbling upon them through StumbleUpon. So it's a great tool, and I would encourage everybody to use it with caution. It's just one of those things that, you know, everything in moderation. So StumbleUpon is my third worst pick. Probably could be on my third best pick as well, but there's definitely value there, but just be careful.
Yeah, that was the one of yours that I was most surprised by, Martin, because I'm addicted to StumbleUpon as well. And just like you, I've found some of my best picks by stumbling. So just allot the correct amount of time for your stumbling.
That's right. Okay, number two worst pick, Sally.
This one I'm kind of ashamed to say, but I'm not very green. We did one of our shows this year about going green and being more sensitive to the ecology and that kind of thing. And our picks that week were related to printing more efficiently. Mine in particular was printwhatyoulike.com, where you could actually put in a web address and pick and choose the components of a particular web page for printing, so that you didn't get a lot of wasted paper in the printing process. And great idea that it is, and maybe 2009 will be the year that I'm more green, but this year I haven't really adopted that, I'm sorry to say. What about you? Are you printing more environmentally friendly?
Absolutely not. Sorry.
No.
And I had a pick similar to that as well. But in general, I don't print a lot. I really try and cut back on that. So even if I'm tempted to hit the print button, unless it's for distribution at a conference or a workshop that I'm doing, something like that, I try and keep it all digital. And one of my top picks, or maybe it's an honorable mention that I've got coming up on the best side, talks a little bit about, you know, my efforts to go paperless. So maybe I'm not green, but what's a, you know, kind of a lighter shade? Maybe
you're
lime.
Balancing it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Lime green. Yeah, I'm definitely not Kelly green at this point.
But, okay.
So no, I don't. But I would agree with you. Some of these tools, I think you just have to get disciplined enough and then force yourself into the habit of using them before they become part of your regular workflow. And they don't you know, increase the amount of time if you're dedicated to doing it. You just have to kind of get in the habit.
Right.
All right, my number two worst pick is Jot. And boy, was I excited about Jot, and I essentially still am, because it's very cool technology. It essentially allows you to call a phone number and leave yourself messages that appear in your inbox or as a text message. It will even transcribe what you say. So the technology of that transcription is really cool. They've come a long way. And Jot was the service that I was using to remind myself of different different tasks that I had to do, and I could actually set rules that would send it to a task list. So whenever I wasn't close to paper and pencil, all I needed was my cell phone, and I would call up the Jot phone number and ultimately just leave myself tasks or reminders, or could even send that to other people, groups of people. Very cool technology. The problem was,
but,
Jot.
Yeah, there's got to be a downside.
There's always a but or however, yeah. And with Jot, that's the case. They started charging. And one of the big upsides to Jot when I first started was this is very cool and it's all for free. And Jot, of course, to stay in business, needed a business model, and that business model was to start charging. So I abandoned Jot, being the spendthrift that I am, and went to another service that is almost as good. And this was another pick of the week, probably a couple months ago, called Recall with a Q, R-E-Q-A-L-L, I believe it is, that essentially does the same thing as Jot, but is still for free. So that's why Jot is number two on my list, Sally.
You know, Martin, I just have to stop and wonder how many things that we're getting really excited about, these Web 2.0 tools that are available for free are going to turn into a monetized model like Jot did. So we'll see how much of that happens in 2009, I guess.
Yeah, unless they can find the wealth of advertisers that they might need for the service, there really is no other way for them to stay in business. Even if it's a couple guys in the garage just, you know, putting this stuff together, they ultimately have to justify the time it takes to support it, maintain it, and ultimately make it usable for those of us that want to make use of the service. So yeah, it should be interesting, and that would be something that we would advise our listeners to think about when you're picking some of these tools, especially the free ones, is, you know, how long is this going to be around in the form that it is, and make decisions wisely based on that. They really need a business model, and as your mama always told you, if it seems too good to be true, it just might
probably
be.
Is,
so
yeah,
exactly. So
yeah.
All right, then your number one worst pick of 2008. Boy, I'm really living in the past.
Yeah.
This is a retro show. Worst pick of 2008, Sally.
I'm going to actually have a little disclaimer on this one. I'm actually going to break my husband's heart with this that I'm about to give. But my number one worst pick of the year is the Dvorak keyboard. I talked about this in one of our shows as being an alternate keyboard layout that's supposed to allow you to type more efficiently and with less stress and that kind of thing. And this is one that actually got fed to me by my husband, because he is a total believer in the Dvorak layout, has it on his computers all over the place, drives me crazy, and something I can't adopt it. I can't go there. I'm too much of a QWERTY keyboard layout person, and so I won't be using Dvorak, but I know that some of our geek listeners may still be interested, so
like your husband.
Check it out. Yeah, like my husband.
And more power to him.
Yeah.
Whatever works, right? I guess that's the moral of the story, is do what works for you, stick with it, and if it improves your efficiency and helps you do ministry better or in a more efficient fashion, then why not?
That's right.
Then for my worst pick of 2008, this is a hardware device, the Belkin Wi-Fi phone. And as with all my picks, I was really excited to start with it. I bought the phone, and it became the replacement for our regular or traditional landline at the Spriggs household. And it is essentially a Skype phone that you turn on, and it immediately joins your home network and acts as a Skype receiver and sender. You don't even need your computer to use the phone, which is one thing I was really looking at when I wanted a phone, is I didn't really need to have my computer on the whole time to use my Skype service. Worked well, worked very well for about 2 months, and then all of a sudden the battery would not accept a charge for the life of me. I had that thing plugged in for days, and the second I unplugged it, it just went totally dead. And just before that, it was exhibiting some strange behaviors as well, where if I got too far from the network router or the wireless access point, it would drop the connection, and I could not figure out how to fix that as well, even if it was, you know, 15, 20 feet away. So the phone and I had a love-hate relationship, and then finally ended up me pitching it in the trash, and now I'm just using the computer to do my Skype. I am thinking about replacing it with maybe a different model, not from Belkin, but from another company. And Sally, you've had some good experiences with your Wi-Fi phone.
Yeah, I have. I'm using a Philips Voice over IP 841 mm-hmm. model Wi-Fi phone, and I can't say that I've had it 2 months. I don't think it's been quite 2 months that we've been using it, but have been very, very pleased with it. It's it'll work as a landline or a Skype phone, so mm-hmm. you can answer your regular landline calls on it if you continue to have a landline in your home. And it's just really a nice phone. I'm real pleased with it.
The concept is a valid one, though. I think we have reached a stage where you potentially could save the cost of that landline phone in some cases. You have to deal with the 911 issue, but cell phones typically take care of that if you have a cell phone at home. But the cost savings for long distance and local calls is amazing because of the Skype model. The price per minute is extremely cheap, so would be something to continue to explore. Maybe I will wait till our best and worst picks of 2009, and just to make sure that your phone is not on your worst picks before I go out and buy the one that you've got. Keep us updated during the course of the year.
Long.
What's that?
I said, I bet you won't wait that long.
Yeah, I'm too impetuous for that.
they are. It is cool technology, just thinking about the long distance. For us, we are long distance to New Ulm, which is just 15 minutes down the road. But we do make a lot of calls just to New Ulm, to members and contacts there. And so for us, it's a real cost savings, because really those interstate calls within the state are more expensive than the ones that go outside the state lines. So yeah, it's definitely a cost savings.
Yeah, and I would think for a lot of our listeners, this might be a viable alternative to services like Vonage or those things that are cable providers. I know Charter around here does the same kind of thing, but not near as cheap as this particular approach. But just don't, I guess I can't highly recommend the Belkin Wi-Fi phone at this point. So that is my worst
pick. Didn't you tell me once you were going to use it as a paperweight or
yeah,
something like that?
Well, it got the heave-ho.
Yeah.
Probably not very green either, the fact that I just pitched in the garbage can. Although I don't know what was left in the battery as a result anyway. Okay, sure. Now to the fun stuff. How do you want to do this, Sally? You want to start with number three? You want to go to your honorable mentions?
Yeah, I thought I'd squeeze in a couple of extras with those honorable mentions before we talk about my number three.
Okay.
I had a couple that I really don't feel like I could live without these days, and I wanted to mention those. Some new things and some that I've been using for longer than this year. First of all, I wanted to just mention Audacity, which is an audio editing tool. We use it for editing some of the Wells Tech podcast audio clips, and we use it here for doing podcasting with the students in the school and for actually podcasting our sermons each Sunday as well. So just an invaluable tool, and the price is right. I love those
freebies,
tools that
yes.
are out there. And so if you're looking for audio editor, I definitely recommend Audacity. And then a couple of other just Web 2.0 kind of things. LiveMocha is a social language site, and I've actually been working my way through Spanish 101 on LiveMocha, and I'm quite impressed with it. I've had feedback from people all over the world as I record myself trying, stumbling through my Spanish assignments, and just really a neat thing to work with real Spanish-speaking people who will record themselves saying it correctly and that kind of thing. It's a pretty cool tool.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in language learning, that's a great place to go. Picnic is another one that I wanted to just mention as an honorable mention. It's a web-based image editing website. And it's really great with the kids at school to allow them to do image editing without having to have any kind of expensive software installed on the school computers. You can upload images. You don't need an account to do it. You can do all types of editing and then save your resulting images. The girls over in the computer club took pictures all around the school of different letters and spelled out some words. And they did all the cropping and mashup work in Picnic, and they just had a blast with it. So So a really neat image editor that's available for free online. Mm-hmm. And then one more honorable mention, if I can squeeze in one more,
sure.
is searchme.com, which is just a really cool visual search website. And I had a couple of these different ones that I played with this year. But the reason I like SearchMe is because you can save your search elements, what items are returned in your search. You can save those in stacks, and you can share your stacks of search results with other people. And again, this is one that I've used in the computer lab at school. I've taught the kids about SearchMe, and when they're doing research, they can easily save the items that they're researching and be able to come back to them and access those sites easily. So a really cool tool to use in your computer lab as well.
Okay. So you have four honorable mentions. I have four as well before we jump into our best three picks of the year. My first honorable mention goes to LogMeIn. That's a tool that I really use very frequently. It's essentially a remote desktop application that works cross-platform. So whenever I need to communicate with my iMac at home, I can get at that from my laptop here at work just by setting up LogMeIn on both sides, and totally free. And basically, I can be sitting at the controls of my iMac even from here in the office. And it goes the other way as well. So LogMeIn is all web-based, and I think they've kind of figured out this screen sharing. And they've got other tools though there as well for IT professionals. We use LogMeIn Rescue in our IT department here to help remote users, where we can actually send our remote users to a website where they punch in a PIN code, and it allows our technicians to remotely operate their machines, do research on what's going on. They can look at services. They can look at different things that are going on the computer to help troubleshoot issues. Works great in that capacity. So LogMeIn is an honorable mention for that reason. Xobni is my second. That's X-O-B-N-I. That's an Outlook plugin. This I use all the time as well. I am notorious for my bad memory. And this is a tool that really helps my Outlook experience, because it kind of collects all of the email conversations that I've had by conversation and by person and by attachment. So I could go back in time, type in a person's name, and see all of the conversations I've had with that person over time, all of the attachments that we've shared. It even shows some diagnostics about when a particular person emails me, so I can see their history. So if they're a morning or an afternoon person, it's kind of a search engine on steroids that integrates seamlessly with Outlook, and that's free as well. Xobni. Third is a hardware pick, and that I mentioned earlier in the show, called ScanSnap. That is a sheet fed or automatic sheet fed scanner, desktop scanner. It's the S510. There's probably even a more advanced version now. I believe it sold for about $350, but it is an essential tool in my ongoing effort to have the paperless office. I have it right there on my desk, and anytime I get something that I really don't want to file in a physical file folder, I just want it in an electronic fashion, you just throw these in the Fujitsu ScanSnap S510. You press the big green button, and it scans it right into PDFs, and I just have to, and it does OCR in it as well, so they're fully searchable after I'm done scanning them, and I just store them in whatever electronic folder that I would like, and I pitch the paper, shred the paper, whatever I want to do, and it has really saved a lot of file cabinet space in my life over the past year, so that would be something that I wouldn't want to live without as well. And then my final honorable mention pick is a website, a training website called lynda.com, L-Y-N-D-A.com. This is a fee, based service, but I believe it's worth every penny, especially if you are in a situation where you need to learn new technologies. These are all well done screencasts about almost every technology that you can think of, from content management systems to operating systems to office suites to programming languages to graphic editing software. They're all done by professionals, extremely, I think, well done. They come with exercises. They're subscription-based. It's an all-you-can-eat kind of subscription where you pay a yearly or annual fee. I think there's monthly fees as well where you can load these up, and essentially it's computer-based learning. But I've used these over and over again for things that I need to get a quick either refresher on or learn for the first time. Lynda.com.
I love it that one of your picks was online learning. That's right up my alley.
There you go.
That's exciting to encourage that in our listeners.
Yep. So now is the time, Sally, where we go to our best picks of 2008. Let's begin with the third runner-up, number three for you.
For me, I picked something that's really made a huge difference in our church and school office, and that's Google Calendar. I think this one is a very powerful tool if you're looking for shared calendaring. And basically, when we got here to St. John's and Sleepy Eye, the calendar was being done in a very manual fashion, and, you know, mistakes happen and things like that. And it was through one particular person rather than any kind of a shared group collaborative effort. And by converting our church and school calendars to the Google Calendar app, which allows you to share with specific people having editing privileges on the calendar, the group calendaring has just made a huge impact on our office work. All of the teachers and all of the staff are able to go in and make edits to the calendar. You can update it real time. It's not just a one-time thing. We've integrated it into our website so that those updates immediately flow through to our church and school websites and are viewable there. And then we're doing printing with it as well. And we're actually using it in our email calendaring software that we use, Thunderbird and Lightning. We're bringing the Google Calendar into that as well. So just an all-encompassing calendar solution for a church office that really, really needed one. And we are just sold on it. It has made a huge difference for us here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye.
Cool. That kind of offsets your number three worst pick of Google Desktop. So you're giving
That's
Google
right.
a little love in your number three pick here.
That's right.
All right.
What about you, Martin?
My number three pick is Delicious. A Web 2.0 technology that's been around for, what, 2-3 years at this point. Delicious is a social bookmarking service that allows users to tag, save, manage, and share web pages from a centralized web source. And really what I like about this is it's my portable bookmarking or favorite service. So I can go to any computer, any browser, and have all of my bookmarks come along with me, and I work on a lot of different computers. I work on one at home, obviously, a couple at home, a couple here in the office. Sometimes I'm at a relative's house, friend's house. If I get on their computer, I can always go to Delicious, and that website, I think they actually just secure delicious.com as well, but it used to be del.icio.us, but now delicious.com works for you as well. What makes this especially useful is little plugins that you can get for any browser, for Firefox or for Internet Explorer, that it becomes a little taskbar up at the top where you can always see your favorite bookmarks and you can categorize them. For instance, I have on my computer now one that is just called Wells, one that is called Apps, one that is called Communications, one that is called Social Networks. I even have one called Google for all my Google stuff, which includes Google Reader, Gmail, Google Calendar, Google Apps. I have one called Main where I have Log Me In and some of those kinds of things. This is an absolute must-have for me, and it really makes all my bookmarks and my favorites portable. And really, I can't even imagine how long it would take for me to put these in some other kind of system, especially if I migrate from one to the other. So putting these in putting these in delicious has really helped me out a lot. And we may remind our listeners that we have a delicious tag called Wells Tech that if you're ever interested in pointing us to a website or sharing a website with us or a news item or whatever, you can tag that in delicious with the Wells Tech tag. And we frequently search that for people who are contributing or want to contribute to the show in that way.
That's right, Martin. Delicious is one that I'd love to have on my list as well. I'm glad you picked it. And it's another one of those that you have to really adopt and live with for a while, yeah. Get used to, make it part of your habit before you start to really see the payoff of it. But you're totally on track with the fact that you can go anywhere. And I'm just like you. I have home computers, I have work computers, and I have school computers as well.
Right.
And, you know, to train your brain that, oh, yeah, I can get to those websites through my Delicious tag. Is just the way to go,
right? Yep.
For sure.
We're closing in on number one. Let's do number two of your best picks of 2000. Your best pick of 2008.
For me, that's going to be one that's educationally minded. I'm going to point you to Scratch, which is a programming language developed by the Massachusetts Institute for Technology. You can get to it at scratch.mit.edu. And if you aren't doing this in your schools, I highly recommend that you do. It's basically like putting together Lego blocks, and the children can build their own programs. They can have their sprites, which are their characters, in their programs, do various things, anything from talking to dancing to bouncing around the screen, following your mouse, all kinds of activities that you can have your sprites do. And you can take it to quite an extensive level. We started using Scratch a year ago in our computer lab here at St. John's, and already just in our second year, the kids are programming their own games in Scratch, and we're having conversations about if-then statements and loops and all kinds of really advanced programming concepts that even from third grade on, these kids are able to grasp with this programming language. So just a very exciting thing. They love coming up to the board, having their Scratch program up on the smart board, and being able to show the class what they've programmed, and just a really wonderful education tool. I highly recommend Scratch.
Cool. Raising our next generation of scientists and programmers and computer science majors, which we know is a much, much needed area of interest for our youth, because that is an area that's going to be exploding, but we just don't have the folks in those fields right now to cover it. So that's a gap that our country is going to see. So anything we can do to kind of create interest, or I think in just general, I think all of these teach good math skills and logic skills, right?
Absolutely.
So,
yes.
Very good. Scratch.
Yep. You have a number two pick for us as well?
I sure do. You can't have a number two without, or you can't have a number one without a number two. So here's my number two, which could easily be number one as well. OpenDNS. That's opendns.com. I've talked about this numerous times on the show. I've also highly recommended this in most of the workshops that I present, especially on internet safety. OpenDNS is a DNS replacement. DNS stands for Domain Naming Service. And as most of you are aware, there is some kind of translation that is necessary between what you type in your browser and how it gets to the designated server that's going to serve up the web page you're looking for. So you have to translate the words that you're typing in, wells.net, for instance, to numbers or an IP address. And that's what OpenDNS does at its most basic level, but it does so much more. And OpenDNS is easy to configure. You simply need to replace whatever DNS settings your ISP has given you. And this can be on the for a larger network or on your home network, but you should really do it on both in whatever computers you're using, because it does content filtering. And I've got this set up at my home network. I just replace those IP addresses and point everything to OpenDNS. So what it does is it's a totally configurable way to content to filter content. They have some filtering levels kind of pre-built in, high, moderate, low, or minimal. It protects you against phishing attacks. At the most minimal level, at the low level, it protects against pornography and phishing. And five other categories. At the moderate level, it protects against all adult-related sites and illegal activity. like hacking and those kinds of things. And that its highest level, it protects against all adult-related sites. In addition to illegal activity, you could block social networking sites, video sharing sites, and what the a category that they call general time wasters. I wonder if they've got
stumble upon.
I bet they do. There's a whole laundry list of things that you can check off that will naturally block, from things like lingerie and bikini sites to they even have nonprofits on here, webmail, politics, jobs and employment sites, classifieds, blogs, alcohol, adware, all kinds of stuff here. And it really works. This is one of those tools, and it's for free, that if you're not using it, I would run, you know, to your router and make sure that this is configured. You can do this on the regular machine level as well, but this is a little bit geeky, but the results are wonderful. It even has some nice features like shortcuts so that you can plug in shortcuts. So, for instance, if you want to just type in mail in the browser and have it automatically go to Gmail or some other mail service, Yahoo Mail, it'll do that for you. If you just type in Wells, you can say, well, anytime I type in Wells, I want to go to Wells.net or Wells Tech. I want to go to the Wells Tech website. So a time saver there as well. They're adding more and more stuff. You can see stats and reports on the activity of those people on your network, where they've gone, what are their most frequently visited sites, all the sites that have been blocked as well. So this is just an invaluable resource. That's opendns.com.
And I guess I owe you a thank you, Martin. I realize now that I heard it here first, and we are definitely OpenDNS users here in Sleepy Eye, thanks to your mention earlier in the year as a pick of the week.
Cool.
So using it at our church and at home as well.
Yep.
And yeah,
works,
great results
it?
With
yeah.
it. Definitely.
Yep. And not a lot of false positives, I've noticed. I mean, it does a pretty good job at blocking the sites it's supposed to block. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, invaluable for a school. Now, I wouldn't rely totally on that. You still want to maybe use some proxy server kinds of things that do content filtering. It's not, you know, it's not the be-all, end-all. In fact, you want a couple layers, but it is absolutely a great place to start. So that's OpenDNS.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good. I don't have any drum roll sound effects, Sally, but now is the time for your number one pick of 2008. I'm excited.
Yeah, I don't have a sound effect either, but I put a heart next to it on the mind map, if that
counts
at all. Because this one, I definitely feel the love for. This is my my personal favorite I wouldn't want to live without, and that's Snagit. Snagit is a product of TechSmith, a company out of Michigan, and it's basically a screen capture and image editing software. And for the work that I do, being able to communicate well with people means being able to capture work that I'm doing on my computer and share it with them easily, either in documentation or in an email or as part of a PowerPoint presentation or a Word document or whatever it is. Snagit allows me to do that. It is a fee-based product. I believe the price is right around $50. They've done some really major updates to it. It has, you can tag all your photos. You can just do a lot of extensive work on your photos, adding different effects to them and things like that. It has layers, so you can put things in front of and behind, working with different objects that are part of your images. So very, very powerful, very intuitive, easy to use, easy to learn, wonderful tool. And they actually have a 30-day free download because they know once you use it, you're going to be totally hooked and you're going to have to buy it. So if you want to try it out, you can go to TechSmith.com and check out Snagit. And while you're there, another TechSmith product is Jing. And actually, it has its own website, jingproject.com. And it's a good companion product, and it's actually a free product, which allows you to do video capture. So if you have something on your computer screen and you want to make a little video, narrate your way through a website tour, for instance, you can use Jing to do that. And they give you 2 gig of storage space to put your images, your video captures out on the web and be able to embed them in different websites and things. So two great products from TechSmith.com. I can't say enough good things about them.
Sally, I have no idea why TechSmith has not contacted you yet to be their spokesperson.
I know why, because there's like a ton of people that are just as enthusiastic as me.
I don't know how that's possible, but they make great stuff. And Camtasia is another one that we use a lot for screen capture. So they do it well, and they do it right, and that's why they're popular, and that's why it is your number one pick of 2008.
That's
so
right.
Congratulations to Snagit.
Yay. And now we get to hear what your number one pick is.
Yeah, mine's not as sexy as yours by any stretch, but it's just good old-fashioned common sense that you need a place today and a secure place today to store your passwords. And this is a common plight among those people in technology. We have lots of sites that we go to. We have lots of reasons to create new accounts and new passwords, especially in this Web 2.0 world that we live in. So my number one pick is Password Safe. And interestingly enough, Sally, this was my first pick on the Wells Tech podcast. So it has some staying power. So basically, it's a utility. The only downside is it only works on Windows, although a later pick in the year, I had an accompanying pick called Password Safe Gorilla, something like that, that essentially does the same thing on the Mac side. But this is a tool I use probably two or three times a day, and that's one of the criteria that I use for my top picks is how often do I use them, how reliant on them am I? And this is an absolute must. I would be totally dead in the water if something ever happened to this application. So a little scary, but just does a fantastic job. I have a keyboard shortcut that brings this thing up, and I can type in the account that I'm looking for, and it would pop up the password for me. It's all encrypted, and it's very lightweight, so it doesn't take up a lot of memory, but it's just there when I need it. And that's and you can double click, and it would do a quick cut and paste to your clipboard, and then right into your web page that you're looking for the credentials for. Again, well deserving of the pick of the year, and again, something that I would totally be lost without. Password Safe.
And I'm totally on board with you on that one too, Martin. Thanks for pointing us to that. I do use it, and I started using it after our first show this year, after you recommended it. And I migrated to a different home computer this year, and that was the first thing I had to have there. You know, very quickly I realized I've got to get my password safe file migrated across because I really need it. And what's wonderful is you just remember the one password and everything else is stored there for you. So just got to keep up with one, really.
I'm hoping they make some improvements. That would be on my wish list for 2009. A couple of improvements. The biggest one would be I need it to integrate with my smartphone so that I've got those on the road as well. I do have it synced through Live Mesh to my iMac at home, so I'm comfortable there, but I don't have a real good solution to put it on my smartphone at this point. So that would be on my wish list for 2009 if I could have one. But you know, maybe the good folks there will recognize that that's a growing need as well. Mm-hmm. So those are our picks, Sally.
Yeah, it's been quite a year. I didn't start out this year needing and using these things the way that I ended the year. And so hopefully they have been a blessing to our listeners as well. And I look forward to what 2009 holds.
Yeah, we would love to hear from our listeners on this, too. If you had a great experience or even a bad experience with any of our picks, we would love to hear about that. We've heard over the course of the year a few people that have picked up some of these and thanked us and shared some of their experiences, but now's a good time for reflection at the end of the year here. So if you have any comments about any of these picks or maybe something that and we had a contest actually mid-year about free picks, and that was a great experience too. But if you've got any experience with the picks that we've just mentioned that you'd like to share with our listeners, please do that. You can go to wellstech.wells.net and offer your comments there or send us an email at wellstech@wells.net. You can send us a voicemail. You can jump on Facebook, a growing number of followers there, so or friends, I guess they're called. I've got to get all my social networking terminology straight here. When are you a follower? That's on Twitter, I guess. When are you a
That's
friend?
Right.
That's Facebook. I don't know. LinkedIn is a connection, I think.
I think you're right.
It's all over the board. So maybe that'd be a New Year's resolution as well to get all those straight. So again, we'll continue our picks of the week. We will probably archive everything that's on the site today back to the beginning of the year and start fresh. So I'm sure there'll be new and interesting things in 2009 for our listeners. And if you've got a pick that you'd like us to consider, tag it with WellsTech on the Delicious site or go to our website and suggest it. We're all ears.
That's right.
Coming up.
Hard to believe. I was just going to say, hard to believe. In 1 week, we're going to be celebrating a one-year anniversary of the WellsTech podcast.
That's right. So that will be a special show. We're going to do a little retro. We're going to go back to show number one, as painful as that may be for both you and us. We may pull out a few clips and some of the thoughts that Sally and I had in our inaugural show, and we're going to really focus on why this podcast exists, what we've learned, and where are we headed. So tune in for that as we kind of take a trip down memory lane and figure out why we're here and where we're going. I think that'll be fun for us, Sally, to take a look back.
I agree.
Let's close the show with some more. We're still in the season of Christmas, even though we're on New Year's Eve. We're going to listen to the beautiful music of Michael Schrader and his song, The Reason for the Season, from his album of the same name, The Reason for the Season. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and have a blessed, blessed New Year.
Walk on a winter's night, the snow is falling down. There's decorated Christmas lights on every street in town. At the mall, all the signs say sale. There's trees and mistletoe. And for a moment, I forget. But all the world should know that the reason for the season, it isn't lights or gifts we gain. It isn't Santa wreaths or stockings or trees or candy canes. Oh, the reason for the season is that God so loved He came. It's one and only Son, so that I'd be saved. As I walk past some office lights, there's parties all around. We celebrate, yet miss the point of what it's all about. And I think, how could I forget, with all the sins I've sown, this baby child's the greatest gift this world has ever known. That's the reason for the season. It isn't lights or gifts we gain. It isn't Santa wreaths or stockings or trees or candy canes. Oh, the reason for the season is that God so loved He came. It's one and only Son, so that I'd be saved. Will I remember never to let go and keep the Christ in Christmas everywhere I go? That's the reason for the season. It isn't lights or gifts we gain. It isn't Santa wreaths or stockings or trees or candy canes. Oh, the reason for the season Is it God so loved he gave his one and only son so that I'd be saved? Well, his one and only son so that I'd be saved.